Pickaxe.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Triforce Podcast.
Oh, we're here.
I'm here.
Yeah.
I'm doing good. Lewis, hello. Welcome.
Nobody
also
asked.
Sips.
But good. Thanks.
Hello.
Good to know.
Well,
nice opener.
You know, people.
I'm
people
fine.
Are interested.
I'm fine.
Sips is fine. This is what everyone wants to know. Period's also here.
Hey.
But in the news this week, Jersey is at the center of chaos.
World War III.
Yeah, we're about to start it. We're about to kick it off here over some fish, some ancient fishing grounds that have been disturbed recently by a bunch of people who don't know what they're doing, as usual, local government here. And everybody is pretty pissed off about the bureaucracy that they're trying to introduce.
And because they've disturbed ancient fishing grounds, a fish poltergeist is now on the loose in Jersey.
That's
rearranging the fish fingers in the frozen section.
That's right. I woke up in the middle of the night and there were fish fingers floating around in my kitchen and stuff. And it was pretty scary. And all of the Navy ships are over here now. There's been a blockade. Man, there's a guy, Civil War reenacting guy that was firing blanks from the castle.
He's thinking, finally.
French boats. I mean, man, it was just.
He's been waiting years.
Oh,
I've been training all my life for this.
You thought I was reenacting.
The French are coming.
I have been training. This is not reenactment. Yeah. I'm ready for the real deal.
So, it's a weird one. Jersey's not technically part of the UK, but because it's a crown dependency, meaning that it's still owned by the Queen and her representatives are over here at like a higher level of control in government. It means that there's an agreement with the UK whereby if Jersey ever gets into any trouble, the UK are sort of bound to protect it.
Yeah,
so
we send thoughts and prayers. That's all.
Yeah. So in this case, France got angry about this introduced bureaucracy for the fishing. And said, well, we're just going to cut off your supply of power because we import 95% of our power from France because it's so close.
I get it.
Yeah.
Like, I hate having to fill in forms.
Oh, man.
And
French are just mad because normally they love it. They love the bureaucracy. And I think in this case, they're just mad that somebody else thought up some bureaucracy before they did. So that's why it was like a blow to their ego and stuff, you know.
Do you think, is there a lot of flag waving currently going on in Jersey and sort of, you know, a lot of is the attitude in general up yours, Frenchies?
I'm sure, like, yeah, there's elements of that for sure. I don't know, man. I'm just in my garage, like I don't really know what's going on. Like,
okay, that's good to know. You're at the heart of a political turmoil, and you're just in your garage
Seen some bits and pieces on the news, you know, and I've like done a couple of tweets, but that's about it.
You
know?
Jeez. Like,
because I was talking to Barry about it yesterday, and he had like a satellite view because all these French boats all sailed over and sort of blockaded Jersey Harbour, and there were two Royal Navy patrol ships that were sent out to kind of just, I guess they got there and they were just like, what are we supposed to do? Are we just watching out for like, what we watched? They didn't even really know what they were there for.
Oh, it's just an escalation. It's just a way of saying,
sort of,
you send, it's like the Chicago fight. You threaten to change their fishing vessels. They threaten to shut your power down.
Yeah.
They send some fishing ships. You send the Navy, you know.
Yeah. It's what's next. Well, I just thought it was funny because they were sort of stood off at a distance, like, you know, two police who weren't quite sure why they'd been sent there or like whether they needed to intercede. So they're just, you could see them on the satellite just hovering like at a safe distance. And Barry was like, oh, you know, where does Sips live? And I was like, here. And he's like, oh.
like a cannonball is going to fly through my window at any moment.
Yeah. It's quite fun. Yeah. So, like, yeah, I thought you could, obviously, it's quite, Jersey's like croissant shaped, right?
Yeah.
And so it was like, you could, there's that big central sort of bay at the bottom of Jersey.
That's where all the Frenchies were blockading.
Which is where people like to walk along. And it's quite nice there, actually. But yeah, it's not far from you, is it? You could probably walk down and have a look at the boats. If you want, they might have gone now, actually.
I thought they all left as soon as we sent in the
I think it's pretty much over now, from what I can tell. I think it's still being talked about, but I don't think I don't think there's going to be any more escalation. I mean, realistically, there can't be because it's so stupid. But
it is interesting, though, isn't it?
It is pretty interesting. Yeah.
How quickly it went from, well, we're going to cut your power off, to warships turning up.
Yeah.
So this is our closest neighbor.
The posturing is something else.
It's just like, well, we're going to send some ships in. It's like, we were friends like a year ago, and now we're sending
warships.
Man,
how exciting for those guys that work on the warships, though. I mean, when was the last time they had to? Yeah, they're like, whoa, oh my God, they need us for something?
I'm picking up 300 targets, sir.
Pick up the pace on those potatoes, guys. We're shipping out soon. Yeah.
So this week I found a.
Can I just go for a pee? Because I just really need to.
Oh, it was such an exciting conversation.
I'll be right back.
Yeah, we'll wait.
He just has to leak. Leak piss out of his.
Lewis Brindley of the Yogg's Cast.
I know, what a guy, eh? Shows up to a podcast, doesn't even do a pre-piss.
Pre-pee.
Yeah. Pre-pee. And now it's just wasting every so you guys just have to sit here listening to us fill in time because he's probably got something really important to say when he gets back from this pee. But
I don't want to hear about it. Like I don't want an update on the pee.
No, I wonder if he's like if he has like good flow.
Do you reckon?
You know when he's peeing, he's getting older. You know maybe
true.
There's some interruptions there or like it slowed down a bit. You know,
I've always been very slow to pee. Always.
Oh, right, okay.
I've never been one of those people that just goes and just like, psh, and it's done.
Yeah.
My body's taking its time about everything. Always.
Right.
I'm always very slow to learn, slow to move, slow to start, slow to change. But once you get me going, Sips, I'm like a powerboat.
Well,
you can't stop me.
Nice. We could
not
use you over here.
Not a powerful powerboat, one of those little crappy ones.
Break the blockade with your powerboating.
One that a distant relative would assure you is seaworthy, but is not. That would be me as a powerboat.
I'm back.
God.
Sorry.
All right, so I was going to say before Louis went pee-pee, I've got, I was looking around this week. For some reason, I was thinking about Choose Your Own Adventure books.
Right.
Right.
And... because I had a chat on my stream about role-playing games and D&D and stuff like that, which I want to talk about a bit. So when I don't know if you guys ever played Dungeons & Dragons when you were kids. Did you guys play it when you were kids?
I never did,
really?
No. The closest I ever got to anything even remotely like that was we bought... me and my friend bought Heroes Quest, like the board game.
Right.
And, but we spent most of our time just painting the figures because his dad had a bunch of model paints. And we just spent the whole summer just painstakingly painting these little figures. And I don't even think we played the game once, but that's the closest I ever got to doing anything like that as a kid.
So I used to play, I played Dungeons and Dragons from when I was about nine or 10 onwards.
Right.
And
was this in America?
No, I never played it in the States. I played it in the UK. So when I came to the UK, one of the other kids that I was friends with, his older brother played D&D. First edition, the one that came in the red box, the classic Dungeons and Dragons with the lad on the front. It's like a little red cardboard box and everything you need is in there. And we wanted to play and he was 2 or 3 years older. So he wanted nothing to do with us. He was playing, in his mind, because he was 11 or 12, ultra-advanced Dungeons & Dragons. You know, the way that you look down on younger siblings. And we were like, "What do you want to play?" And he's like, "Oh, no, you're not playing." And we're like, "Please." He's like, "Fine, you can make a character and we'll play some Dungeons & Dragons if it'll shut you up." So we're like, yeah. So me and my friend made characters, which is our favorite part. We would just make characters endlessly, just making characters, rolling dice, making characters, designing, picking what equipment they have and everything. And he had this adventure. I don't know if it was from a book or whatever. And he tried to kill us off as quickly as possible to get this over with. So that he could just say, well, you played and you lost, so that's it. I'm not doing it again.
Yeah.
We had to explore this old house. And I think I was an elf. And I think my friend was, I think he was some kind of warrior. We're exploring this room. And the thing is, if you show players a room, if you describe a room, they think there has to be something to the room. Because everything in every game you've ever played has taught you that they don't bother to put stuff in there unless there's something to it.
Yeah.
The problem is, quite often, there is nothing in that room. There's something in the house that you need to find, maybe, but not in every room. It's not like a dungeon where you just go... like, if there was a dungeon adventure and you go down a corridor and there's a large room here with an ornate statue and everything, you're searching it and there's nothing there. You go down another corridor, there's another room, this time with a large well and 3 bells. But none of it does anything. It would be the worst adventure ever, right? So you expect it all to do something. So we're in this room and we're poking around for ages. And he says there's a large fireplace here. And we're like, oh, maybe there's something up the chimney. So I jab my sword up the chimney and all the rubble up the chimney falls down and kills my character. And my friend, in trying to dig me out, there's a further landfall and he is also killed by the stuff falling out of the chimney. And I remember thinking how awesome this was to be playing D&D. But I thought this sucked. And I very quickly got the idea that about bad dungeon masters, and we were talking about this on stream, that it should never be seen as a contest between the players and the DM. It should always be seen as like a story that you're telling together, and the DM has to adapt the story based on what the players do. And the players have there is peril, and there are things that can go wrong, and they can make bad choices. But it should never just be you failed and you're dead. So that's what brought me to Choose Your Own Adventure books. And there is a Tumblr called You Chose Wrong, and it's literally the ends, sort of the ends from all these different books. And I realized that Choose Your Own Adventure books are essentially like playing Dungeons and Dragons with a terrible dungeon master who is essentially just like a computer. It's like a proceduralized flowchart. There's no real choices to be made. For instance, a door to your right flies open, throwing a brilliant shaft of light into the corridor. Suddenly, you are surrounded by a circle of snarling chimpanzees. They begin to close in. The end.
Yeah.
And that's from Choose Your Own Adventure 15, House of Danger.
Like, Choose Your Own Adventure books, for me, honestly, are some of my worst childhood memories. I think back on some of the ones that I got out from the library, and I feel a bit sick. And the reason is because when I got those books out at first, I thought, these are going to be great. And this is something I can really get into. I'm going to love this, whatever. I got them, and they were so disappointingly bad. Like, I couldn't even get far in them, and I would just cheat in the end. You know, I would, I would flick, forward just to see what the outcome was, and then go back and make, you know what I mean? It was just, the whole thing was just so unsatisfying. Like, I don't know, I remember the cover art of the book being just not great and stuff, and just the whole thing kind of gives me a headache. Choose Your Own Adventure books.
We've rediscovered these books through Jingle Jam. So me and Simon obviously do a Choose Your Own Adventure every year on Jingle Jam, and we have an artist draw alongside, and it's great.
It's
fun.
I love the
and
stream. It's one of my favorites.
I hugely remember, you know, and we're unpicking something now and sort of identifying where the problems are. I think mostly the problem comes with you can't really develop a character very well when there's alternate routes through the story for people to take, right? But the other problem is that you do have to kind of railroad them down a certain route while telling them it's their choice to do it. And the other thing is you have to sort of keep track of your life. You have to roll dice. There's other awkward things that when I was a kid, I was reading this book on the fucking bus. I didn't have a notepad and a pen and a dice to roll. I didn't have these things. So I would just read it like it was a normal book.
Right.
And the classic thing people do is they keep multiple fingers in the book
of
in
course.
Case they hit one of these endings where, you know, it's just arbitrary often, you know, suddenly you'll get eaten by an anaconda or fall into a pit of spikes or, you know, and sometimes those traps will be two or three deep, right? So by which I mean, you know, you'll make a choice and then all of that choice inevitably leads to death anyway you go from there, but you don't know that that's a dead end, right? Until... Like the way these books are often designed is that, you know, you can see how they made them on a big whiteboard of post-it notes, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah.
With these bits where it's like, well, this branch here leads to death. This branch here leads to him getting the MacGuffin that he needs. This branch here, you know, leads to him carrying on but not getting the MacGuffin. So he can't complete the book anyway. Do you know what I mean? It's often choice A, choice B, or choice C. I actually spent quite a long time writing a Choose Your Own Adventure book last Christmas.
I would love to see that.
Man, I would love to see this Choose Your Own Adventure, and I would love the book to start out sort of fantasy with, like, you know, you're choosing these things, but then slowly the book becomes more about your struggle to write this book, and the Choose Your Own Adventure becomes really sort of like introspective about you and your whole life and stuff, and it's just this downward spiral of misery that I could get into. I would love to read that one.
I would like it to be an erotic fiction because that seems to be all the rage.
I think at any given moment anything erotic is all the rage, right? People are just like, they can't help themselves.
They love it.
Yeah.
You decide you've got to get help from the boat. There's no telling what you'll find at the village, and something is obviously very wrong here. You don't make it very far though. Along the way you run into a large hungry anaconda. The Indians of the jungle say the anaconda is the spirit of the Amazon, and anyone swallowed by the snake lives unharmed inside forever. If that's true, send a postcard. I mean, geez, come on.
That's
hell. Ridiculous.
Imagine you live it for eternity inside an anaconda. Oh. Like, how cramped it would be in there.
So I did like quite a lot of the Steve Jackson and Ian Livingstone ones that they did. And there was one, the sorcery sort of quadrology, I think it is, like the Shamutanti Hills, Care Sutiputa Traps. I can't remember what the other two were. That was really good. The illustrations in it were gorgeous. But there were certain moments of the book where you thought, well, I don't really want to have to start again. I mean, you assume there must have been people out there who diligently obeyed the rules at the start of the book, and if they died, started again from the very beginning of the quadrology in an attempt to play through it.
Well,
but there'd
exactly.
really be no point, because one of them is you sleep in an inn, you wake up, and the innkeeper has put this elaborate trap with a guillotine over it, and you have a rope in one hand and a rope in the other, and you pull one, you live, you pull one, you die. You're not going to start again, because the moment you get to that point, you're just going to do the other thing. So it's like, well, I know the journey up to this point. Why would I repeat it? So I always, that was a clear and obvious keep your finger on the page and choose the correct option, because otherwise it feels a bit daft.
There's a lot of bits in these books that people, well, there's been some sort of, what's his name? Charlie something wrote one recently, a fight fantasy book. There's been some guest writers. Rihanna Pratchett wrote one.
Right.
There's been a couple of famous authors writing them, because they remember them in the same way we do from their childhood.
Yeah.
And also there's loads of other writers other than sort of Ian Livingstone, Steve Jackson,
yeah,
sort of
classic
tons. Ones that we remember. And they cover all sorts of genres, but they're all, a lot of the readers are very protective of the style and of that dead ends and the literal dead ends where you die. You know, you as you reach for the riches, the golem's hand slams shut around your neck. This pathway has no need of those, only out for themselves. As you struggle to free yourself, the roof collapses, burying you alive.
Yeah.
You have died.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's a standard element of these books, and I don't like it, but I think most people treat that as a continue in a video game.
Yeah,
right?
they just
go back a page and are like, oops, well, guess I'm just auto loading my last autosave. It's funny how that culture influences how people perceive games, right? Like D&D did so much for modern day RPGs and modern day gaming, right? It really established the idea of what we now see in video games, and having played so many video games, going back to these things with that knowledge changes how we see them, and they look very basic and they look very simplistic to us. So in some ways that's necessary. Certainly with board games you see it, because you know, when you're trying to adapt a board game into a video game, you have to make it much more complex.
Yeah.
Whereas the reverse is true when you try and do it the other way, right? You have to really greatly simplify. Like Stardew Valley, the board game, is like a incredibly simplified version of the game, because you have to teach it to someone new in 20, 30 minutes.
Right.
You know, you can't do an hour, 2 hour long tutorial for
Stardew Valley, the board game.
I can't believe there's a board game of that, in all honesty.
Well, it's basically
playing the entire
game of Stardew Valley in 2 hours.
Man, there's a Cities Skylines board game as well. I don't really understand why
you'd have a board game of a computer game, because to me, whilst we've spoken about board games a lot, I know you're a big fan, Lewis, and they're more of a social thing. Do you need a City Skylines board game? Like, is that a thing you need? I don't understand. Like, to me, the board games of a TV show or something, or a movie, at least, you know, something, you make something interactive out of something that's essentially just a passive viewing experience. But when you've already got something interactive, to then make a board game of it as well seems a bit like overkill.
Okay, I found the thing I wrote. Do you want to hear page one
yes.
of my Fighting
yes.
Fantasy book that
oh
I wrote?
Oh my god, okay, sure.
All right, let's start. Okay. Let's do this. We're going to do this.
So this could be real bad, but here we go. Okay. As tunnels and shafts give way to open caverns, you begin to feel familiar cobblestones under your
boots.
Wait,
this is how it begins?
Yes.
This is the first page?
First page, yeah.
Who am I?
Well, yes, you're going to find out.
Okay.
It's a big, big lead up.
Yeah.
At last, you turn a corner to see the great dwarven stronghold stretching out before you.
Am I a dwarf?
Well, you'll find out. Okay. Nestled deep in the heart of the flame-spewing mountain called Kalakaz Makatath.
Very dwarven.
Jeez.
You are looking upon Stoneheim, one of the most remote and ancient mountain fastnesses of the dwarves.
Man, I love how pleased he is with himself here.
I'm laughing at my own stuff that I wrote. Squat, rune-carved stone buildings huddle together on a plateau around a great central illumination, Maka Ea, and your jaw almost drops open as you gaze upon this great wonder. As wide as a storehouse and bright with bubbling lava, it is an enormous pipe adorned with arcane brasswork and runes, pulling molten rock.
Hit pipe very hard.
Pipe.
I'm going to hit that shit.
Bong.
Ooh, pulling molten rock from deep below and disappearing high into the ceiling above.
I was going to get a little Cheech and Chong about it there. Two dwarves appear. Cheech Ra and Chong Po, and they offer you a hit of the massive dwarven pipe.
They cough and laugh. Yeah, so you have travelled long and hard to return here, but your heart is gripped with dread.
Oh, God.
Stoneheim feels wrong. It is cold, and dwarven towns are always fierce with heat.
What about the lava?
Yeah, what about the flame-spewing mountain? Where's that
now? Who knows? No smoke rises from the thousand chimneys and forges. But worse than the chill air is the deathly silence. On your journey here, you encountered no dwarves. The three great gates that you passed through were sealed, but unguarded.
Yo, maybe they all died of boredom after reading page one of this book.
Your heartbeat quickened with each step, fearing and knowing that something was terribly amiss. As you turn onto the main thoroughfare, Stoneheim appears deserted, but your keen senses catch glimpses of dark, sunken eyes from behind twitching curtains. As you reach the center of Stoneheim, you see a lone dwarf kneeling in front of the high forge, looking up at the roiling lava churning up through the great pipe. You have heard that many of the dwarves of Stoneheim revere the magnificent construction as some holy relic, and indeed the dwarf appears to be praying. The lava pipe ascends through a ring of enormous furnaces in front of the Anvil of Ashes, an enormous anvil on which sits an equally oversized hammer, easily three times the size of the dwarf in front of you.
Take hammer.
As you approach...
I type take hammer.
Okay. As you approach, she stands and turns to face you, letting two glowing rune-etched axes fall into her hands. Hail, brother. She says, suspicion dripping from her voice. From the crimson-red, three-braided beard and blue-woad tattoos on her cheeks, you recognize her as a berserker.
She's one of the most feared
dwarven warriors. Yeah, female dwarves have beards. Do you know this?
I don't know if they're necessarily fully bearded female dwarves, are they?
Well, it's a choice, isn't it? You could have shaved...
Gimli said that, didn't he? The dwarven women have beards.
Yeah. Sometimes more bushy and luscious than the men's, you know?
I'm not into that. Hey, I heard this thing
just on the topic of dwarves. Apparently, Tolkien, nobody wanted to ever go for walks with him because he would stop and, like, look at a plant for 20 minutes and, like, study it, like, the details of the plant and stuff, like, every plant he came across.
That really comes across in the first few chapters of Lord of the Rings. Yeah, when they're walking... When they do the walk from the Shire to get to anywhere interesting, it's right there on the page. His obsession with every roll of the land and every color of every leaf. It's right there on the page. If you can make it through that section, you're doing well.
Then you will see, you know, if you look at the nature, if you keep looking enough, you'll see all sorts of stuff. There's little tiny details everywhere. That's one of the meditative things you should do is look, but really look, you know?
Yeah.
No.
I
choose whatever the option is that leads to you do not look closely at the vegetation. I'll do that one.
Yeah, we're doing a big Jersey blockade on that idea.
Anything to say before I cut you down? She says. If you would like to reply, you can turn to 280. If you would rather draw your weapon... Turn to 21.
No, that sounds like the end. 21 is too close. 280? How many pages is this?
Well,
I thought this was just one page. You said I've written some of it.
All right, let's
How long did it take you to write all this?
Oh, like I was writing it for a couple of weeks, but I finished. I didn't finish it. I got about a third of the way through. I'd say I'm about a third of the way through.
All right, I broke it into three bits.
What?
No, wait. Let's fight her. Let's try and get this over with. Let's fight her.
Okay. Sensing your aggressive movement, There is a blur in the air, and suddenly a bear is lunging at you. Savage.
Come on!
Savage teeth. And razor sharp claws moments away from slicing your throat open. If you were an ordinary dwarf, your head would be rolling loose across blood soaked cobblestones.
Oh, wait, what's that? Underfoot? It looks like yarrow root. Let's examine it for 30 minutes.
Ooh. As you duck to examine the root, buds. The bear's attack sails overhead and he falls into the lava.
But this is when you're going to pick your class, right?
Oh.
But you are no ordinary dwarf. What is your history? And so this is when you are. This is. I basically wanted to have it. You choose between three, like. Types, three backstories, if you like, that then define what your abilities are going forward, right? Give you some different paths through the book. So here's the three choices.
I want to be the one that's an expert at fighting bears.
Right.
So that would be most useful right now.
If you traveled with the burned ones to the deepest of the deep mines and stared into the core light where the intense heat burned your body to ash and your very soul was scorched and charred until it was nothing more than a wind-blown ember, and then you were pulled back from the abyss and blessed by the mountain, reforged as an ash dwarf with the ability to read fire runes, then turned to 87.
I can't remember if I was or not.
Oh my god. How one. Okay, how many pages is this book? Will 87 get me close to the end?
This is like a normal length fighting fantasy book. It's going to take like 3 to 6 hours.
Fuck. Oh my god.
I'm not going to get it done in the next 5 minutes.
Give us some examples of ends.
Okay.
I want to know how
is
we
Is there an option for all of that stuff to happen, but the abyss forgets to pull you back and you're just dead?
Well, I'm sure that happens to a lot of dwarves in this universe. Yeah, I'm sure it doesn't
that's,
work
that's
at all.
That's our backstory. That's the one we're going for.
There's two more, but that's fine.
No. Sips is one. Go on, let's hear the other two. let's hear the other two.
If you delved into the darkest forbidden chambers and spent countless years fighting the horrors of the abandoned catacombs.
That sounds hard.
Only to be mortally wounded by,
yeah,
and causing a mortal wound to the Worm King, a legendary basilisk,
right,
and were revived by drinking the still warm venom from its fangs, turning your flesh to stone
and
your blood to acid, imbuing you with the strength of 100 dwarves.
Oh.
If you are a stone turned, then turn to page 6.
And if only my blood was filled with acid right now.
I wish I was dead.
I
wish this book would end.
That's a good selling point for the book on the cover. I wished I was dead.
I want to speed run this one.
For goodness sake. Option 3. If you survive the traps and curses of the tombs of the old ones, blew dust from lost scrolls and forgotten plans, tapped mysterious kegs to sample brews from the ancient Tinker Kings, or if you brought forgotten engines back to life with black spluttering coughs, forged brass-ringed windows to peer into the cosmic beyond, or felt the sting of the lightning sprites on your fingertips, then you have mastered the arcane art of engineering and turned to 22.
Nah, you don't want to be a fucking engineer. Fuck that.
Yeah.
He's going to lose to the bear. I mean, quite clearly. The stone lad.
Stone lad.
You don't want to be the ash guy either, though.
Fuck the ash guy. Fuck the brainiac. Give us the stone
we
lad.
We want to be the acid blood one.
No, that's the ash one. We one.
Yeah, no,
the stone one.
Yeah, no, the stone one was the one.
Yeah,
the basilisk gave
him
acid
stone
blood.
One, stone one.
He's got acid for blood.
Yeah.
What is he, the alien?
Yeah.
He's a xenomorph.
Just one of these dwarves managed to kill my entire crew in less than 24 hours.
I don't think I've actually completed this thread yet. This is one of the ones I haven't done yet. Anyway,
right, let's hear some of the ends. I want to hear.
You want to hear one of the deaths?
Just a couple
ones.
Of
yeah,
ends.
How do these things even
hear.
End? Because like I said, I just got a headache. Like I never got through any of them, so I don't even really know how they end. Are the endings like pretty good normally, or do you always win?
I don't know. I never finished.
No.
I always just got about halfway and went and did something else.
The other thing I wanted to do was I wanted to add keywords, right? So rather than keep track of your life through like the score or life or numbers, I wanted to add keywords. So, for example, if you got burned, you'd get like, say you gain charred or you gain like burned, right? And then if you got burned again, you'd get like killed, right? So if you ended up, you'd lose the game if you... took on multiple damage keywords, you see what I mean? And that would also affect how people reacted to you and stuff like this. Anyway, so you heroically leap off the edge of the platform, gain inspiring, but immediately regret your decision as you bounce off an outcropping of rock, cracking your head against the surface and spinning away. You blink your eyes open to see yourself falling fast into a sea of lava that heralds your certain doom. You are dead.
Great.
Wow. Just out of, that's out of nowhere. I mean,
you plummet into the lava sea, and despite your considerable powers, you cannot survive being submerged in lava, and you return to being one with the mountain. Your adventure ends here.
Good
but
Lord.
If you were the Ash Dwarf, you would have survived that. You see?
Oh. Well, how am I meant to know that?
Well, because you can't dive into lava if you're the wrong type of dwarf.
Well, I wouldn't have dived into the lava. That's crazy.
No.
Whoever chose that was ridiculous.
Here you go. How about this? Consumed by berserker rage, you tear into the dwarves as they try to run away.
Goodness.
When you have feasted on their organs, you turn back into the djinn, but you have missed your chance. He looms above you and brings his scythe down in one easy swing and cuts you clean in half. Your adventure ends here.
Jeez.
So there you go. There's another death. But yeah, there you go. That's a little... That
well
was
done.
A project that I
well
had
done.
Some... I did some work on. Like, ended up giving up because I was planning on writing it for Jingle Jam, but I didn't do it in time.
Right.
And so it got shelved, and I haven't really come back to it. And I guess I should do, really, because I'd like to do it with Simon. I'd like to take Simon on a sort of themed dwarven adventure that's familiar to him in a sense. Like, this is almost like writing a D&D campaign for someone that you know well, because I can add in references to stuff that he, you know, feels like he knows, and the dwarven universe that he's familiar with from things like WoW and other things that we're, you know,
yeah.
If it needs to feel in universe, right? Anyway, I enjoyed doing it, but I don't think it's very good. It's supposed to be a bit kind of silly.
You did great.
Yeah, no, I mean, that was...
Thanks.
That was really commendable.
You were gripped.
I was.
We were gripped.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's. I just felt like I had this. I just found it. Like, talking about it is worth. I never share this with anyone.
That's so nice.
Nice.
Now then, that's out there. I guarantee you, you'll get a bunch of messages saying, "I want more of Lois's, but blah blah blah."
Yeah,
then you'll have to publish the whole thing.
I'll have to finish it. Yeah. Yeah. I'm not sure. I do need a crazy wall to go through and do all the threads. I started making it, but it was. Oh man. I just thought maybe it's easy for me to just. Write like one thread. I don't know, to start with.
Yeah.
And then fill in the second thread.
Do one really
afterwards.
Good one, and then, you know, and then flesh it out from there.
I think also when you're writing and creating stuff, you do have to I have to trick myself when I do anything. I sometimes that involves doing the fun bits first, you know? If you think, oh God, I have to fill out this boring bit, then you probably shouldn't even be doing it in the first place, you know?
Right.
You should just find a way to avoid having that boring bit in your story. You know, it should be full of bits that you're interested in, want to tell.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it can be pretty skippable. If you're not interested in writing it, then you shouldn't
exactly.
be writing it, and
yeah,
they don't want to be reading it.
Exactly.
So, yeah, one thing I did this week, which was interesting, completely pivoting the topic, is I did some voice recording. So I went to a studio day before yesterday,
right?
Locally, and I did some voice lines. It's the first time I've ever done anything like that, really, like a professional studio. And it's for Humankind, which is the new new Civ game. So basically, they said to me, "Oh, do you want to be in the game? We're not going to pay you." I was like, "Sure." What do I have to do? They were like, "Oh, you could just take some pictures of yourself." And I was like, "Okay, send them in." So they sent some pictures, and they were like, "Oh, these aren't good enough. We need to get some more done." So I was like, "Okay." So I got Joe takes loads of pictures of me, and they were like, "We need back of you and head and everything, like 3D pictures." So I was like, "Oh, crikey." So I sent all these pictures in, and then they were like, "Oh, we need you to do some voice lines for your character now." And I was like, "Oh, okay, sure. Let me know what I need to say, and I'll just do it in Audacity and send it back." And they were like, "Oh, no, we need it like in good quality." And I was like, "Oh, okay. Well, we've got a studio here. I can just go in the booth and do it in there." And they're like, "Oh, no. We need it. We need to like have a voice coach. There's like 470 lines. You're going to have to be there for 2 days. We're going to have to rent a studio." And I was like, okay.
Wow.
So I went over and stood in this booth, met the nice people. There's a booth there. In fact, it's right next to the BBC Bristol. So I was in David Attenborough's recording booth,
right.
Where he normally does all of his dulcet tones for the BBC nature stuff. And they played these sort of animations of Civ lead, like a generic stock animation of the Civ leader, sort of saying something along the lines of, oh, you know, like angrily shaking his fist or like bowing, stuff like this. And I'd have to say these generic kind of voice lines, which are like, you snake, how dare you betray me? Or something like this, you know. And so I slowly over the course of the day became more and more, because I started off saying, I'm just going to do my normal voice. I'm going to be me. I'm going to be like, you know, you nasty man, don't do that. But then over the course of the day, I became more and more Matt Berry. I became more and more exaggerated, and more and more sort of, hail, friends, I will be your grand leader. And it just sort of became slowly more ludicrous.
Were they happy?
Did you have fun, though?
They were fine. They didn't say anything. I had fun. It was nice. Smashed through. Got done by about 2 o'clock, actually. So I didn't need 2 whole days, 9 to 5. I needed a morning and a bit to do them.
Right.
It was very interesting. It was quite fun. I had a nice day. And I think I'm interested to seeing what it looks like in the game when it eventually
is it this month it comes out, or is it? When is it?
I think
it
got delayed. So it's like 6 to 8 weeks away.
Okay.
But obviously, I'm a big fan of that sort of, you know, that sort of
oeuvre
of video games. And it's nice to be in one.
Yeah. You know, I
think that's one of the best things about our
job. I think that's
awesome.
I think it's awesome. Yeah, we get to do stuff like that. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I look forward to it.
I must admit, some of the things, because I had to sort of, there were quite a lot of lines that were quite, like, angry, okay? Like, I found myself, like, a bit uncomfortable with the idea of yelling this at the player. You know, it's like my character comes up and is like, you mangy dog, how dare you spit on my people in such a way? Do you know what I mean? And I almost like, because I was sort of doing them all so quick and lost in the moment, and I had to get in character being very angry. I didn't really soften any of it or give it a like more lighthearted spin or make it cheeky. It was all very kind of, so I'm not really concerned.
Are you very angry?
I got in character angry. I didn't get angry in real life, but I'm worried that it'll come. I'm just slightly uncomfortable that, like, I didn't put a lighthearted, I didn't think about it really, because they hadn't sent me the lines beforehand. I couldn't really tweak it to my personality. So it was almost like I was just reading out things suddenly that I was not, they're not offensive or anything, you know, but it's like almost like just a bit rude and a bit aggressive. I'm just worried that people will clip the voice lines out. Then again, I think people... I'm just paranoid now.
Don't worry, Lewis. You're a warrior.
What a journey, man. Holy jeez.
It was a bit of a journey. It was fun. Interesting. And man, my voice at the end of it was like absolutely killing me. My throat was like really, really parched and sore. And like just talking. It wasn't even like I was really flamboyant or like, you know.
Yeah. When I, you know what, the professional voice actors are amazing at preserving their voice and still being able to do the voices. When I did the, for Dota, I did the Rick and Morty announcer pack with Justin Roiland, right? And we would do, I think we did like six or seven calls over like Skype. And he would be recording at his end in here because he's got a studio at home, because he's a voice actor. That's what he does. So he's in California and he's recording, and he's just got the mic open on Skype so I can hear his takes, and we would make adjustments to the script and stuff like that. And the stuff that was wildly inappropriate, I would mark as wildly inappropriate. So he did Rick and Morty for like 3 or 4 hours at a time. He would do it, and he would do the voices seamlessly going between them. And one voice is very high, the other voice, you know, Morty's voice is kind of like, oh God, Rick, you know, and then, oh, Rick, Morty, come on, we gotta get the bottom tower, you know, like that. So he did that for like 3 or 4 hours. And I'm thinking a normal person would only be able to do that for like 30 minutes before their voice is completely gone.
I couldn't keep my own voice consistent over the course
those
3 hours.
Two like, other freaky voices that are very straining.
I started to forget how I sound. I was like, what is my normal voice? I had to like kind of like try and reset my own. Because I started putting on this weird like, voice. So I was really like almost... But the other thing about it was, because the way it was set up was, it was just in a random fucking order. It was like evil kind of character me, and then friendly character me, and then evil character me, and then friendly character me. So I had to like schizophrenically switch between, oh, welcome, friend, it's good to see you again, to,
what do you want, you disgusting maggots? Like, and then back and forth again. And
so
like,
when you came back to the office, were you a bit like, hello, Harry, you worm, any calls?
So yeah, that's normal me, actually. Yeah, that was easy to just slip right back into that narcissistic asshole. Oh yeah, so it was worth doing. It was fun. But yeah, great respect for the people who can somehow, I don't know how they maintain like a consistent character voice.
It's crazy,
like, day after day, or especially multiple ones. You know, these people who do like 5 or 6 different characters in a show. Yeah, really, really, really cool. Anyway, I recommend it. You should do it.
Yeah, I recommend to everyone out there. Get into voice acting for a video game.
Yeah.
Did you do the voices for the characters?
Or
did you
like just
no, he got some big Hollywood name into it.
I got David Attenborough in.
Same.
Yeah. You got Brian Blessed and a bunch of other people.
So that means you haven't listened to the audiobook, Lewis.
I haven't listened to the audiobook.
Interesting.
No,
yeah, I know I did it. It was a week.
It's available on Audible, isn't it?
It is.
And other platforms, probably.
Probably. I came down there for a week. I think I did a couple of streams, and I would spend about 2 or 3 hours a day, I think, maybe slightly more, recording it. And we had a lot of office noise, and we had to keep coming out and saying, can you guys shut the fuck up, please?
That happened to me a couple of times, actually, yeah.
Because we didn't, I mean, we just did it in one of the old offices. We didn't have, like, a studio or anything like that, because you've got the streams going on and everything. I guess now, actually, would have been the time to do it. It's probably pretty quiet in the office, but we did it when everyone was down there. It was super busy, but it was hard work.
Oh, man.
You get into the flow. After a while, you get into the flow. But sometimes I just couldn't finish a sentence without fucking it up, and it'd be like, my God, it was just taking forever.
Yeah.
And we would sort of have to start again. But
it's like that sometimes, right? You gotta take a little break and come back.
Exactly. But the tricky part is the mic was so sensitive that the turning, because I had it all printed out, turning the page would show up on the audio. So I'd have to, when I'm getting near the end of the page, I have to find a point to pause, memorize that sentence, turn the page over, and then so that you can't hear the sound of the page being turned on the on the book. Otherwise, it sounds a bit weird.
I like that. That's good, That's a bit of ASMR, the page turning.
I wouldn't have minded it, but the problem is it's not printed out in the same format that the book is. So the turning of the page might not be in time with... Although, actually, you're listening anyway. You're not reading, so... Yeah, no, I don't know why we did it. But, you know, we wanted to cut down on all the background noise. But I'm pretty sure that you can hear office laughter or chat at some point. Because the thing is, like, your guy's desk's right there. People would congregate there, and they're like, oh, what a fine tale. Oh, oh, oh. And then we'd also have the air conditioning would kick in every now and then and go like... So that was on the recording. So it was the biggest time sink was actually killing background noise, telling people to shut up and waiting for the air conditioning to be quiet.
Yeah. Well, that's their office in a nutshell, isn't it? As well as the pigeons and the seagulls.
Oh, seagulls, eh? Jeez.
And various things.
Jeez.
Had a big rainstorm this week, huge rainstorm. Obviously, our roof just leaked all over the place.
Yeah, we had hail here this week. It hailed on, like, Wednesday, I think.
It's fucking May.
You know, it was the coldest April. It was the coldest April since 1922.
Oh, yeah, tell me about it. Jesus. Like,
it's fucking
awful. It was like Arctic wind out there. It was unbelievable. It's nice today, though. It actually feels warm, and tomorrow is meant to be like 18 degrees, which is pretty
good. I'm excited
to
returning to life. Oh my God.
Yeah. What's the deal with you getting a vaccine and stuff, Lewis? Do you have to wait? Because you're under 40, right?
It's like a doomsday counter ticking down on the news every day. It's like last week it was like 41, then it was like 40, and I think it's like 39 now. I've got to wait like another 2 weeks or so, probably.
Right.
And then it'll be my age group.
It's not fun, but it's important.
Absolutely. I think people are starting to get pretty fucking slack around it.
Anyone wondering if it's good for you to get the vaccine, consider this. Nothing else in life that is fun to do is also good for you, right? Think about it. Eating disgusting sloppy food, doing hard drugs, getting really drunk, doing dangerous stuff.
Yeah.
None of that's good for you.
We don't need
but
to
it's
tell
awesome.
Our audience.
But
they
it's
know.
Awesome.
No one's listened to this who's that irresponsible. Relax. We've shooed them all away with these believers
but,
of
but
all,
getting
these
the vaccine
bullshitters
sucks.
Have all been
the
shooed
out
The
next few days
here.
Will suck, so you know it's good. It's like going on a diet.
Anyway, the other thing I did this week was I played Pokemon Snap.
You scum.
It's great. You should get it for your kids.
Fuck off. I don't want them anywhere near a Pokemon or Pokewoman. No, thank
you. It's full of very adorably cute Pokemon that you bother. Do you know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of those kids in zoos who bang on the glass. That's what Pokemon Snap reminds me of, right? Because you're in a little bubble thing and you get sort of along on rails and there's Pokemon everywhere and you're just constantly harassing them with like camera sounds and like throwing apples at them and like flashing music and flashing lights at them to make them like turn towards you or smile, do something.
Right.
And then as soon as they like do something, like a little dance or a little fucking wiggle or they breathe fire or burp or jump into a waterfall or whatever, you take a picture of them while they're doing it and that, you know, that gives you the reward. So you have to provoke these animals that are in the wild. So you go out into the wild, you provoke them into doing something, and then you take a picture of that, and then and then the guy gives you stars for it. So it's like it is like being that kid in the zoo who is tapping on the glass to like make the animals.
Well,
which is a terrible thing. The whole point of taking
pictures of wild animals is, if nature documentaries have taught us anything, you just wait until they start having sex, and then you take a picture covertly, like some kind of nature voyeur. Ooh,
weird peeping
Tom.
That's right.
That's what you're supposed to do, yeah.
You don't go in there and poke proactively.
But there's like four pokes, different pokes for the Pokemon. I guess that's why they're called Pokemon. They've added a bunch of like new ones since I last have even been aware of Pokemon. And some of them, they're all so cute now. They're so, so cute. I'm in love with like...
What, Pokemon?
There's like a coral one. There's like cute little manta rays and stuff and like little fish.
What?
There's like three or four different fish.
Wait, all this Pokemon stuff sounds like what I would have expected to just be in Pokemon no matter what.
Well, I didn't quite realize that like... I was still on the idea that it's all the same ones that I remember, you know, and they are sure like the Pikachus and the Bulbasaurs and all them are still in there, all the favourites, but they've cutened it a lot. Mm. Or at least for this game, they've picked the cutest ones. Oh my God.
Right.
And there's so many now as well. So many more. There's like 20 different kinds of bird Pokemon, like 15 kinds of Pokemon that live on a beach. There's like 20, like any kind of animal blended with any kind of thing is a Pokemon. And I just was impressed. Like, I don't know why I liked playing Pokemon Snap.
I'll tell you what, I'm just looking at the names of the Pokemon, and it's very clear they ran out of ideas for names, and now I think they're just mashing
letters
together.
Yeah, they're the worst.
I'll give you an example. Here's the first 10 in Generation 1 of the Pokemon, right?
Right.
Bulbasaur, Ivysaur, Venusaur, Charmander, Charmeleon, Charizard, Squirtle, Wartortle, Blastoise, and Caterpie, right?
Yeah.
Now let's look at that. Those are numbers 1 through 10. Generation 8, the most recent 10 are Zacian, Zamazenta, Eternatus, Kubfu, Urshifu, Zarude, Regiliki, Regidrago, Glastrier, Spectrier, and Calyrex.
sounded drunk when you were
exactly.
those.
It's like a drunken list of just, think of a fucking name. All right, here's one. Dreepy. That's one. Dreepy. Snom. Mr. Rhyme. I mean, they've given up.
So, in fact, I'll tell you what, one of them is called, is a sea cucumber Pokemon called Pyukumuku. Okay.
Yeah.
And that's the English name. In Japanese, it's Namakoboshi.
Right.
Or Namakobushi. And it's like a sea cucumber, except a giant white gloved fist comes out of the end of it.
Right.
And like punches things or grabs things.
Honestly.
It freaked me the fuck out. So I was playing the Pokemon Snap. And I was like, just, you know, as usual, throwing apples at things, spooking them, like trying to get to dance for me, the usual. And I throw an apple at this thing and this giant fucking fist comes out of its mouth, just grabs the apple and took it back in. And I was totally freaked out. And that's what Pokemon Snap, I think, is really. It's like these things are just really fucking weird ideas. Like only the Japanese can come up with this stuff. It feels like a lot of time.
I tell you what, I do like Animal Crossing. I don't play it, but my wife and both of my girls play it. My youngest loves the game, and she's obsessed with getting other people onto her island and going to other people's islands and all that kind of social element of
it's very wholesome, yeah.
But she is the nicest islander. She makes things just for her friend's island. So she ran up to her. She was super excited. She was like, I helped my friend make a cafe. And I had all the furniture made. And I was just waiting to see if I could help someone make a cafe. So I made loads of cafe furniture. And we built a cafe. And now her island is up to 3 stars.
Nice.
It was like, made her day doing that. That's a sweet game. I like that.
I don't think like Pokeball Snap is all that bad. Like, I think
it's making animals into a commodity, Lewis. You goad them into doing something worth looking at, as if the animal, the Pokemon itself, is not beautiful. No, it must be a performing kablunky for me.
Yeah.
Perform kablunky. Jump around.
And I'll only be satisfied if it punches out its foes with its big comical Mickey Mouse gloved fist that comes out of his whatever.
The animal must do our bidding before it has value. No!
I genuinely couldn't shake it, and that did taint the whole thing for me, I guess. And maybe that's just the cynicism of seeing our... I don't know, I constantly read, and I can't help it because it's always there. People constantly throw bad fucking news at you all the time. It's so depressing. Like, someone will be like, oh, yeah, there's a bird that doesn't sing its song anymore because there's too few left in the wild, that the species has forgotten its song.
That is sad.
And it's like, oh, fuck me. You know, like, God. Like,
just get back to singing for my sake. Christ.
Just fucking...
Well, if this bird ain't going to sing, let's fucking kill him. What's the point? What are they here for?
Oh, man.
You're rude.
God.
Anyway.
Fucking stupid bird. Think about somebody else for once.
Jeez.
We don't need real animals. We got digital fucking weird ones now, which are even cuter, you know.
You know
Pokemon
what?
Ones, yeah.
Philip K. Dick, Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep, foretold this, people replacing the natural world with robotic versions of creatures. And the question
that have
is,
big eyes.
Do they dream?
Yeah. Indeed. Mm. Well, there you go. That's a little philosophical note to end the podcast on.
Right, what an ending.
Choose your own adventure whether to listen to this podcast again.
Skip to 1 hour and 1 minute if you don't like any of the topics that you've
been. At the start of the podcast, we should put that. If you wish to listen to the podcast, continue. However, if you think it's going to be garbage, turn to page 1 hour, 2 minutes, and 30 seconds. God. The end.
Oh, man. Yeah. Choose your own adventure.
You have died. God. You have fallen into an abyss of boring chat.
Of course, ironically, whichever one you choose, that happens. So, you know, you're either going to listen to the podcast and reach ascending, or not listen to it and still perish.
Like I said, by episode whatever we're on now, I think we've shaken out most of the people.
168,
175 went up this
175,
morning.
175, yeah. Jeez. Yeah, so 176.
So
Christ.
Since we did the 100 episode special at YogCon, we've done 75 more podcasts.
That's amazing.
This
is now 76.
That's fucking
so
nuts.
We're gonna have to think of what to do for the big 200.
Yeah. Yeah. I've got a couple of I haven't I'll start thinking about some cool ideas though. I'm sure
we'll think of some cool ideas.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, don't think too hard.
No, I won't.
Never.
Thanks to everyone. Thank you to everyone for listening. Thanks for all the support.
Yeah.
It's always much appreciated. You could check out new episodes of Triforce on Spotify every Wednesday. And also, Pitch Please is back. I'm on it, I think, this Sunday.
What was your idea?
It was basically like having therapy for my Path of Exile addiction.
Right.
Because I wanted to... I think I just wanted I want like games with more automation.
Yeah.
Right? I want my games with more programming.
Right.
I want, instead of an action RPG, I want an automated RPG, which is a terrible idea, and the guys did a very good job in letting me get it out of my brain and questioning me and realizing I knew I didn't really have a plan.
Imagine you play this game and it's like at the start it's an action RPG and you have to go through like the motions, you have to like you skill up, build up, get gear and stuff, but then the other part of the game is that you get older and become wiser and then you mentor other adventurers and you can like send them out and you can occasionally just go in and see what they're up to in the dungeon, like, you know, if they've gotten any cool stuff and like how quickly they're clearing like the monsters and everything. So it becomes like it transitions into like a management game where you have to manage heroes that go out and do this kind of stuff and they come back and they bring back the gear and
so
you
like
sort
real
through
life
it and stuff.
When you like you work for a cleaning company
and
whatever,
then you own
then
the cleaning company
you end up managing the cleaning company.
Yeah.
Right. Wow. Well, that sounds like a pretty interesting idea.
That would be awesome, no?
It was not what we thought about, but maybe we need a follow up.
Just maybe do a follow up and pitch that one, please.
Yeah. Well, that's out there. They're our friends, so you can check them out if you're interested in listening to a podcast. Otherwise, thanks for listening. See you next week.
Yeah.
And goodbye.
See you then. Bye.
Bye.